If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
Loving you too much and letting you know.
Listening to a cover of the band's Don't Do It from the Kitchen Dwellers. It's part of their Reheated Volume 1 EP. As you could hear, the Kitchen Dwellers are a straight-ahead bluegrass, newgrass four-piece from Montana. We caught up with Max Davis and Torin Daniels on a rare day off to talk about the Reheated EP, their grueling tour schedule, and the potential of a new record in 2019. Shh, don't tell anyone. Our conversation started, though, with a discussion around the inspiration to cover the band. While there are some tribute concerts a la The Last Waltz Revisited, for whatever reason, the band probably don't get their proper due in the jam band community. So why, Max, did you guys choose to cover them?
We had been talking about wanting to do a tribute to a band that we always really liked and listened to a bunch. And actually, when we were recording our last album, Ghost in the Bottle, in all of those recording sessions, we were listening to a whole bunch of the band. And that's just the band that I've always kind of had a love for, and I think a lot of the other guys too. But so, yeah, we just decided that we wanted to kind of start putting some covers out there that we could record and have all nice. That's kind of what we ended up with.
It's interesting that you chose the band, because they're not a band that specifically gets covered a lot. And maybe they're also a band that doesn't get as much props as they probably deserve in the community. You know, people always talk about, certainly in the jam band community, people talk about the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers Band and Jefferson
Right.
Airplane and other bands of that era. But the band, for whatever reason, isn't a figurehead in all of that. And I'm curious to know why you think that is.
Well, for a couple reasons. First of all, I totally agree with you. I feel like they don't get the some of the notoriety and attention they deserve. They do seem to, especially in the music, in kind of in our environment and in the industry, the music industry. I feel like they do. You know, people that know about them love them and are fanatic about them.
For sure.
They kind of have that lore of they played with so many people, and you know they were Bob Dylan's backing band for all those years, and there are so many elements to the band that make them American. But I think for maybe a reason people don't know them so much is just because, you know, they, even though they did tour after The Last Waltz, they didn't really tour as much, and you know, with a handful of studio albums, they had some big hits, like everybody knows The Weight,
right?
And maybe like I Shall Be Released and some other tunes, but yeah, for the most part, a lot of their, I feel like so much of their songs, so many of their songs are just kind of like deep tracks.
Yeah, it's sort of like they had a really short career. I mean, even though as the band, not necessarily as Dylan's backing band, although that only lasted a couple of years, but you know, 68 to 77. I mean, it is a short period of time, but, you know, as far as a roots rock, Americana, or even folk rock band go, I don't know. I mean, they put out a lot of music in a short amount of time, and they were so, so talented. I mean, Levon on his own is extremely talented, never mind, you know, Robbie and the rest of the band. It just kind of went by so fast.
Right. Right. Yeah, and they all put out music, you know, after the band, which, you know, a lot of people have heard. But, I mean, the stuff that they did when they were the band is, I mean, I think it's just some of the best music I've ever heard.
So what made you decide to choose these four songs in particular? Get Up, Jake, Don't Do It, Rockin' Chair, and one of my favorites, actually, Chest Fever.
Yeah, that's definitely one of them. And you got me, Max, here, and then we've also got Torin here,
okay,
who sang lead on most of these songs, so he'll probably be talking here as well.
Okay.
We just kind of chose those four tracks as kind of, they were some of our favorites. Like, everyone kind of put in their own vote as to what their favorite ones were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think since we're all pretty familiar with the band, most of them are pretty deep cuts that a lot of people haven't heard. And I think we're also going for that because, you know, like you said before, like the band, it doesn't get, you know, as much notoriety or credit as they deserve, a lot of people feel. But I feel like recently there's been kind of like a resurgence of people like doing, you know, like tributes to the Last Waltz and
right.
doing more band covers. We've like seen our friends like Midnight North, they've just kind of done some stuff with doing some of their own takes on some band covers and things like that. So I think we really wanted to shoot for doing ones that other people hadn't necessarily covered a lot.
Right. And was it weird for you guys to, I mean, these are songs that have, you know, sometimes an 8, sometimes a 10-piece band behind them, to strip them down to their core for a bluegrass outfit to do? Was that, you know, was there a lot of rearranging going on, or you know, not as much?
I feel like that there's a good amount of rearranging, but I feel like that's also something that we kind of enjoy doing a lot. We tend to cover a lot of bands that aren't necessarily string bands or folk bands,
right.
and we like to do a lot of just random covers from several different decades of music, and I think we really enjoy sort of sitting down and rearranging these parts from these other bands that there's not, you know, there's not a mandolin part written out, or there's not a banjo part written out, and
right.
then sort of designating certain instruments to our instrumentation. I think we really enjoy that, so it kind of came pretty easily to us. So,
and Don't Do It, there's a horn part that Swain was doing on the mandolin, and so yeah, we weren't really sure the organ intro into Chest Fever, although we did have Jordan contributing on keys, which made it really, really, really sweet and fun to have an extra set of hands. Because yeah, it is hard to kind of cover all that ground with acoustic instruments, but also well fun.
And is there a plan to do more covers by the band, or put out separate volumes of other bands that you want to cover? Like, what's the plan moving forward? Because, I mean, these covers are so tight and so great. It sounds like,
well, we just did a 3-night run in Montana.
Cool.
And the show that we did in Missoula on Friday night was a winter themed show. We called it the Winter Bluegrass Ball. So we learned all these winter themed songs, and funnily enough, one of the songs that we learned that none of us knew, but just the song that we learned and played for that show was Acadian Driftwood
right.
by the band.
Yep.
And it was funny learning that. We were like, oh, we totally could have put this on there. So yeah, I think we'll always be learning songs from bands that we like. But yeah, going as far as next week, he did, I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about what we would do if we, you know, when we do another one.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like that's definitely the idea. Is to we might pick a different band to do on the Volume 2 one. But we should name it Volume 1, because there is most likely going to be another one. So.
Makes sense. Let's talk about the Kitchen Dwellers as a band. You know, what's interesting about you guys is that you stay pretty close to your bluegrass roots. You aren't a newgrass band specifically that experiments with different sounds, like, you know, the Dusters would, or Railroad Earth does, or Yonder does. I mean, you stay pretty close to your acoustic instruments and creating sound from those instruments. Is that the preference, or is it just you have an audience right now and you're still a, you know, somewhat of a baby band, and so you kind of have to stick to your roots?
Well, I would say our sound is definitely evolving at a pretty quick rate.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely, just within this past year, have definitely taken a lot more influence from other places. And, you know, I guess if you attend any of our live shows in the past couple of years or so, a lot of people actually do really compare us to the old Yonder. Like, before Jeff left Yonder, we
right.
did that comparison a lot. A lot from people, but we also I feel like we incorporate a lot more different sounds. We definitely have been fully experimenting with all sorts of pedals and things like that, and and writing more tunes, like instrumental tunes that would be closer, you know, more aptly described as like banjo metal rather than bluegrass, something
right.
like that. Things have been kind of changing pretty rapidly for us. So I guess we do definitely, pay tribute to our bluegrass roots, but I feel like things are going in all sorts of different directions lately. So,
is that tough for you guys because you're on the road so much? Is it hard for you guys to spend some time thinking about new sounds, or is it just, you know, you want to try out a new pedal, or somebody else wants to try out something, so you just bring it out on stage? Or is there downtime where you guys are able to talk about experimenting with different sounds and writing bluegrass, not bluegrass metal, but banjo metal? I mean, is there an opportunity to really galvanize around a change in the sound?
Usually we show up to a tour and Torn has a new pedal, and that night I hear something I've never heard before.
Right.
So I feel like a lot of it is on the fly. I grew up playing electric guitar, so a lot of the sounds that I used playing electric guitar have translated over to acoustic. We don't have a whole lot of time off the road, so a lot of it is figured out, like day of show, during sound check. You know, we are trying to get a certain sound out of an instrument, and then all of a sudden we find the right tool for that, and then it kind of just goes from there.
And I think a lot of it, of our recent success with stuff like that, can be attributed to having our own sound guy on the road. We have our friend Michael Scully. He's like our full-time sound engineer now, and he's just been going along so that when we do have any sort of downtime on the road, we can do like a full setup and practice, and we've been a lot better about more wisely utilizing our time that we're given when we're on the road, because we so rarely spend any time off the road now, that when we do get home, no one really wants to put in a couple full days of rehearsal,
right?
Even though we have been doing that lately, but we've just been better about utilizing any spare time when we are on the road to kind of hone in some things we've been working on. Everyone's been definitely putting in a solid amount of time with the band, that's for sure.
Which leads to an obvious question. Ghost in the Bottle came out in April of 2017, so it's been a bit of time. It probably doesn't feel like that for you guys, but for the fans, it certainly, I'm sure, does.
It feels like that to us, too.
Oh, does it? Okay, great. But
you're always wanting to put out newer stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, but because you rely so heavily on touring, it's probably hard to get time in a studio where you can get your heads around new songs, both from a lyrical standpoint, but also from an instrumentation standpoint. Are you when you're in the van, are you working on new things when you're doing rehearsals? Are you working on, like, is that a constant evolution to the music writing process?
It's pretty constant. It tends to die down a little bit when we're super busy, but
right.
It's definitely always there. We're definitely always trying to solidify new tunes for sure. Even if we are holding them back, if we're not playing them in a live setting yet, if we're holding them back for a new album, we're still sort of always trying to work on them.
Yeah, I think when we're on the road, that's kind of when we get a lot of our just general practicing in, as far as just improvements in playing and singing and all that. But the time that original stuff really gets written is more often than not at home, when you're just in a different headspace when you're on the road. Sometimes, you know, one day you might wake up and be like, oh, I've got the song. But I feel like for us, it's more common to have writing happen at home.
But that doesn't mean that because you haven't put out an album, I would imagine in the live setting, you're trying things all the time, right? Either covers or songs that you have written, right?
Definitely.
And what is the opportunity for a new record from you guys in 2019 or dare I say 2020?
Well, I would say 100%.
Yeah, 100% for sure. I'm not exactly sure how much we're allowed to discuss.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But yes, I would say there is a 99.9999% chance that there will be a new album from us within the next year.
Short of a catastrophic event.
Right.
Yeah, short of an act of God, there will be a new album.
Well, for you guys, it must be a catastrophic event to take any time off from the road. I mean, you put a lot of miles on, and it's pretty great. Like, I'm looking at the schedule now, and you don't really stop at all. I mean, you stop for days at a time, and I would imagine it doesn't feel like stopping when you have a couple of days in the middle of December, and then you're back out again. I mean, yeah. It's just a torrid pace. How do you keep up with it all?
Well, for one, we love doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone would be able to spend as much time on the road if we didn't truly enjoy doing what we were doing.
Right.
Also, learning, adapting to how to live on the road. There are certain kind of tricks to staying healthy and getting enough sleep. Is huge, and because being on the road all year long takes its toll on anyone. There are some certain things, eating right, getting enough sleep, drinking an insane amount of water.
Right.
We definitely don't do it like we used to do it when we were 23.
Right. For sure. When you thought that you would be huge rock and roll stars and you could just live a life of luxury, leisure, and not have to worry about your bodies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, and just in this past year, the touring has always been pretty constant, but it's definitely been ramped up since this summer. But I think everyone has a good attitude about it, and even with like our management and the people we work with, booking agents and all that, like the whole team together is kind of all got a really good attitude about it and see good things on the horizon. So it's easier to sort of work at a constant pace when you have these things coming up, that are sort of motivators to do better and to do your job better for everyone involved.
I'm curious about what the brothers in the scene have been telling you. People like, there's lots of guests on your record, but people in Railroad Earth and Green Sky and the Dusters. What has kind of been some advice that they've given you that you've noticed has been really valuable as you get out there and make a name for yourselves?
I think one of the biggest, hanging out with like people like Andy Thorne from Leftover Salmon, who produced our last record, and then Chris Pandolfi from the String Dusters. We kind of like got some advice from them, just from like hanging out and playing together. Tips on, how to be easier on your body as a musician and kind of like adjust your playing and the way you sing and everything on stage so that you can do it forever, so we can still be able to do this when we're 50 years old or just kind of ways to change up your playing and just ways to be like mindful about your playing that really just improve your technique as a musician and everything. We've gotten some really good tips from those guys and from a lot of musicians that we've played with, and that whole crew too is sort of like they're like the big brothers,
right?
To the bands our age, they're we definitely look up to them, and they're all those bands are really really there for the younger bluegrass bands, or they realize we're all part of the same small pond of fish swimming together, and they really like, I feel like they look out for a lot of the younger bluegrass bands, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
How about your fans? I mean, this is a growing community of fans that you have, who are fairly active on social media, and you're fairly engaged with them. What can you say about that? I mean, the whole fandom now of this particular, and I hate saying genre because it really isn't, it's way bigger than the genre itself, but of bluegrass or new grass fans these days. I mean, they're pretty rabid for the music that you guys are making, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is also with like the social media thing. The whole music industry has changed so much where now with social media, everyone gets a very close and personal look at how music is made and where we are in the country. And so, I think the rabidness of the social media is also, you know, we've met people out, especially people always ask where my favorite place to play is. And I, for some reason, always circle back to the Northeast. We have, I mean, obviously Montana and Colorado, but, the Northeast, we go out there and there are people out there that we've met time and time again that are basically like family now. And it's like with the social media thing, you know, we'll play out there and then that week after we can still be communicating and talking with them about the, you know, time we spent together. So I think a lot of it's just really cool that you can kind of keep in contact and yeah, you know everybody a little bit better.
Right. So we talked about being on the road, and you guys are on the road for quite a haul here. We talked about potential, 99% potential of a new record. What are you most looking forward to in 2019 as 2018 comes to a close?
Red Rocks.
Right.
That's something we've been trying to do for a while, and so we're very excited about that. Maybe if Torin wants to talk about Red Rocks.
We're obviously really excited for Red Rocks. That's like a, you know, that's some sort of every musician's dream, I guess.
Right.
Get to play somewhere like that. Is really something pretty incredible to be a part of. But yeah, but not only that, but the fact that we'll be there with bands that we are really good friends with and have been for a long time. Pigeons Playing Ping Pong. We just did a whole fall tour with them and had a great time with them. And then Twiddle, we've been friends with since I don't even know when. The first time they played in Montana, I think the only people at their show was like us in the band and our friends. We were like the only people that knew about them, and we hung out with them that night, and ever since then we've just kind of been good friends and gotten along really well. And so that's really cool to be a part of something that, you know, that at that scale that's we've been, you know, talking about doing, or you know, for so long.
It's kind of interesting that the three of you are on this bill together. It is almost like a mini festival because your sounds are so identifiable and so different from one another that it is almost like a festival experience at Red Rocks that night. Do you imagine a lot of you guys will play in each other's sets and all of that as well?
I can imagine that will definitely be something that happens at Red Rocks. It tends to always happen whenever us and Twiddle get together, and then since hanging out with the Pigeons boys too has been something that's, you know, really fun to collaborate with those guys. So yeah, I could say people could definitely expect that.
Some Red Hot Chili Pepper.
Exactly.
Banjo, yeah, yeah. Metal thing. Yeah, that's
banjo metal Beatles. Yeah.
Yeah, banjo metal Beatles. Awesome. Hey guys, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. We've been watching you and we've been listening to your stuff, and we can't thank you enough for your time and continued success, all right? As you rise the rungs, as they say, and continued success, okay?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot for having us.
Yeah.
I really like these guys. They're genuine, make great music, and seem to stay very true to their roots while experimenting with new sounds. It's also nice to hear how well they speak of the bands that came before them and some of the people they've shared the stage with. That show in Red Rocks with Twiddle and Pigeons Playing Ping Pong is going to be cray-cray. For more on the show and their upcoming tour dates, visit kitchendwellers.com. Before we leave you, how about we listen to another song off the Reheated Volume 1 EP? Here's one of my favorite band tunes, minus the monstrous pipe organ intro, Chest Fever.
tracker. Any style that would back her. And I said she's a chooser, but I just can't refuse her. She was just there, but then she can't be here no more. Unless my mind unwills, I feel the breeze down in my knees. But just before she leaves, she
been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.